Kilmartin Museum will reopen on the 3rd of September with exciting new visitor experience and upgraded collections and learning facilities. They've instigated a major extension and will join together the two existing buildings to create an amazing new museum facility. And I'm talking today to Dr. Sharon Webb, Director and Curator of Kilmartin Museum, about the journey to get this far and what you can see when you go and visit the museum. So I'm joined by Sharon Webb, the director and creator of Kilmartin Museum. So Sharon, maybe to start us off, for people who perhaps haven't been to the museum before, don't know the significance of Kilmartin Glen, maybe start by telling people what's the big draw of that area? Why is the museum there and what's its big focus?
So essentially Kilmartin Museum was opened in 1997 to celebrate and care for and reveal the stories of Kilmartin Glen. Kilmartin Glen is incredibly important in the Neolithic and Bronze Age archaeology. There's a number of rich density of burial and ritual monuments in the area, things like the Neolithic rock art, the Linear Cemetery, which is Neolithic and Bronze Age, so over 4,000 years old, the stone circles and standing stone rows, but also a lot of really important artifacts have been excavated from these monuments. And then also later on, in about the 5th century AD, Dunad became the centre of the Kingdom of Dariada, which was a really important early medieval kingdom that was widely known across Europe. So the Glen has, you know, a real kind of focus of really important moments in the history of Scotland, but also the history of Britain as well. So the museum essentially was set up to celebrate, to tell the stories of this really incredible place, but also to care for a lot of the artifacts that come from the Glen, but also from the much wider area of Argyll as well.
And I mean, people who visit the area might have seen some of the standing stones, the stone burial chambers, the cup and ring marks. They're all part of the wider things people can visit, aren't they?
And yes.
And go up Dunad, the hill itself, and see that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, what Kilmartin Museum does really is to kind of tell a lot more about those stories, but also to show people the artifacts that have come from those places. And in the new museum, we'll have we've got artifacts that come from the Linear Cemetery, from and from Dunad as well, so from the prehistoric landscape, but also the early medieval sites as well. So just, you know, archaeology is picking up fragments of things that people have left behind in previous generations, and either that's monuments, the remains of monuments, or archaeology, artifacts. And so it's really trying to put together those stories and tell tell people what the latest research is on all these aspects of history. And I would say Kilmartin Glen is internationally important in terms of the stories that it has to tell. So having a museum and being able to see the artifacts in the context of the place that these artifacts were deposited thousands of years ago and then excavated is an incredibly sort of emotive and powerful experience for people coming to the area.
Yeah, and I mean, you touched on the new museum, which is where we're talking about it now, and we'll come on to that. Maybe before that, just pick up on how you came to be involved, because you've been key in the project and in sort of creating all that collection of artifacts that we've got from Kilmartin Glen.
So I came to work at Carmarthen, it's actually 20 years ago, it's in 2003. And I came from the University Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology in Cambridge, which was had an incredible sort of vast collection of prehistoric and historic material from all over the world, actually. And I suppose what the reason I wanted to come to Carmarthen is because of its incredibly interesting prehistoric archaeology, but also because it was such a huge opportunity to do something quite special here in a kind of intimate, if you like, setting where the museum and the artifacts were kind of right in the heart of the glen. I think when the museum was first founded, it had probably less than 20 artifacts in its collections. It's quite unusual, and quite often museums were founded because there was a collection of artifacts, whether it was university or private collections, that then kind of turned into a museum. And it was quite the other, in reverse almost, with Carmarthen. So when I came to work here, there was a need and an opportunity for somewhere to care for Argyll's archaeology. And so we've got 40,000 artifacts in our care now. And as you'll know, Pippa, there's about 20,000 of those we look after on behalf of Argyll and Bute Council. And the other 20,000 artifacts that have been collected for Carmarthen Museum through the treasure trove system, which operates in Scotland. And these artifacts come from all over Argyll. So we're also able to kind of help people to do research on Argyll's archaeology, and also to provide that kind of safe space for these artifacts to be cared for and preserved for generations to enjoy in the future. There's probably maybe a lesser known kind of aspect to our work, really. That is that role we have in collecting and curating artifacts from all over Argyll.
Yeah, I mean, that, as you say, it's that the creation of the museum sort of enabled all those artifacts to come together more, where there perhaps wasn't a home for them. And I mean, I know when I came here and we first met, it was probably almost a decade ago, and I mean, the museum was quite small. People know will identify with that, but you know, you're finally bringing to fruition a vision that you had probably before my time, but you know, over a decade ago. So, what will people see if they come to the new museum now? What have you been able to achieve? Because there's a lot of sort of blood, sweat, and tears, and sleepless nights, I'm sure, that have gone into to creating that.
Yeah, that's right. I would say that I have spilled my own blood on the museum. a couple of weeks ago, I cut my hand on something really sharp that shouldn't have been sharp. And anyway, all the health and safety protocols were in place, but to sort that out. But I think the museum, I mean, it was fantastic when it was first opened, but we outgrew it, basically. So we didn't really have the space to properly curate all of our artifacts, but also not really the proper kind of visitor facilities to cater for the people that are interested in the area and are coming to the area. So if you're coming as a visitor, we've more than doubled our floor area, and we've pulled the museum exhibition, which was in five really small rooms actually in the basement, right out front and center in the new extension, which is amazing architectural construction by Neil Gillespie's kind of architect vision. And it's a beautiful space inside and outside, and it really does the job. It's you know, in terms of security and environmental controls for us as a museum, which weren't in place before. But the visitors will be able to come and walk through to reception, and there's a decompression space where they can kind of gather their bearings. The cafe area is not that much changed, because all our community consultation work basically said that people really love the cafe space, they love the Green Oak Conservatory, and they didn't want us to change that. So the Green Oak Conservatory has been renovated, but it's exactly the same, looking out over the glebe cairn. And when you come into the museum exhibition, it's a one big space now that we can get, you know, bus parties in, which we couldn't really before. And Also, a full class of school children can walk through there, which again they couldn't in the five kind of cramped rooms that we had before. So we'll be able to we've created an exhibition that basically takes people back in time. So they'll come, they'll walk in and get orientation about just, you know, because there's, you know, just to tell people that the sheer number of prehistoric and historic sites there are in the area, which is a really huge concentration. And then we walk people back through the later medieval period, and then into the early medieval period, to Dinard, and we've got we've managed to agree with Historic Environment Scotland to, we've given home to some of the really important crosses that were on display in Carmartin Old Church, as it's now known, which is now in private ownership. And then we've got, we couldn't resist, although we've tried to focus the exhibition on Carmartin Glen itself, we've where our own collections are particularly strong, we have displayed them. So we've got the Coal Hoard, which is a later Bronze Age metalwork hoard of swords and spears that was found on the Isle of Col in 2012. So that's been conserved, preserved, and we've displayed that. And I think it looks absolutely fantastic. We've got experts from the National Museum talking about the practice of later Bronze Age hoarding, which is as a ritual practice. Then you walk into a space that explores what Carmartin Glen is really famous for, which is the early Bronze Age and Neolithic archaeology. So the ritual landscape, what would have been a vast and widely known ritual landscape at that time, you know, it's comparable to Stonehenge, Avebury, and Orkney as well, where people had these kind of ritual centres that they would go to. We've got illustrations of archaeology that no longer exists, which the timber circle that was found, that's been excavated, and you wouldn't, because it's called a negative feature in archaeology. So it's basically timber posts that have rotted out, but they've been excavated. Once they've been excavated, they're preserved by records. So it's just the remnants of charcoal and stains in the soil that you see. So you wouldn't be able to visit that, but what it would have looked like in the Bronze Age was just incredible. So we've tried to illustrate that. The same for the Cursus Monument as well, which was a 400 metre line of oak posts that is actually the first monument in the Glen, a very early Neolithic ritual monument. So, and also artefacts from the Glen, because antiquarians were interested in Carmartin's archaeology in the 1800s. A lot of the sites, the really prominent and most obvious sites, were excavated. And the archaeology that was found there had gone to, as was quite common at the time, they actually were split up between the British Museum and the National Museums of Scotland. So we've been able to borrow back lots of those artefacts actually that come from Carmartin Glen, including the thing I'm really, really excited about is a 4,000-year-old Whitby jet spacer plate necklace that was placed in a grave near Slockavulin, and we've been able to borrow. That's one of the prized pieces in the National Museum of Scotland, but we have proper security and environmental controls to be able to look after this very fragile artefact. That'll be the first time that's been back here and on display. It's never been displayed here actually before in Carmartin. It did come back here for research purposes and a television program under tight security for a day several years ago. But so that's just incredible. And also we have the only, although antiquarians had talked about excavating Bronze Age human remains, burials from the Cairns, they were quite often reburied at that time. So we actually only have one human skeleton of any that's survived to any great degree. It's odd, tiny little bit of human bone from other sites, but we have one female skeleton, which was excavated from Upalagi Quarry. And she was buried in a kist, and she's in her early 20s. So we've created a special room for her. We've reburied her in the same orientation and the same position that she was buried in 4,000 years ago. And this is a woman who would have she would have walked down the line of the linear cemetery. She maybe might have known who was buried there personally. So we've got stories about what we think her life was like, but we've also got we've had a facial reconstruction made, which I'm really excited about, because it's such an amazing piece of artistry, shall we say, the world's probably most, I say he is the world's foremost expert on facial reconstructions, somebody called Oscar Nilsson, who works in Stockholm, actually in Sweden. So we're really excited to share that. And, you know, we've put her in a room so that people don't have to go in there if they're sensitive about looking at human remains. And we've thought about it very, very carefully and very thoroughly. And we have a policy on reasons why we're doing this. But she's such an important individual for us, because she is the only Bronze Age, or the remains of a Bronze Age woman that we have that survived to this day. So and then we've also got things that we have an art exhibition by an artist called Lizzie Rose, who's local, called Carbon Legacy, which takes as its reference point the earliest monument, the 400 meter long Cursus monument, and explores what our legacy might be in 4,000 or 5,000 years, through artwork, through the restoration of the oak trees that were chopped down to form that Cursus. So it consisted of 375 oak trees, and Lizzie has 375 oak seedlings, which we're going to swap in the temporary exhibition space, and they're sitting outside right now for people to view. So we're trying to use archaeology a little bit to help people to think through their legacy and their own legacy and their own what they'll carry forward into the future as well, in the face of the climate emergency that we're facing. So we'll be able to use that temporary exhibition space changing exhibitions in the future as well, which brings a little bit of interest for the locals as well, for people to there'll always be something new to come and see. And then also for school children, we've got a part of the extension contains a classroom space that we can seat 30 children in, or 30 adults in as well, so which is just fantastic for us to have that facility, actually, to be able to do educational activities and mini conferences and talks and things like that in that space. So the collection store as well, which is secretly, I think, Pippa, my favourite room, is where we're going to put the 40,000 artefacts. So they're in a secret location at the moment, and we'll early next year we'll be moving them back into the collection store. And that was, I suppose, for me, the germ of the idea, which for the project, really, and the vision for the project, was to make sure that we created a safe space for our girls' archaeology to be cared for, curated, and to bring benefit to people alive today, and into the future as well. And we've done that with the new building. So yeah, we're very excited about just getting the thing open.
Now, I remember coming in and seeing the drawings of the concept and that storage being sort of very central to that. So I'm looking forward to seeing, because certainly for anyone that drives past the museum there, the sort of new modern extension that wraps around the original listed building that is very tantalizing and actually I think quite unusually for these projects, still very similar to the original concept that I saw. And, you
Yeah.
know, a big part of that, the challenge for these projects, and I know for yours, and the reason why they take so long is the funding. So you've done a lot of work to get the funding together, and a lot of partners are putting money in to support that.
Yeah, that's right. We've been blessed, I think, with the support that we've had from partners, funders, private individuals, and obviously our Gala Butte Council have been very generous in giving us some funding for the project. And I think, you know, for its what it will do for economic development, but also looking after our Garland Butte Council's own archaeology collections in that collection store. And we have displayed a couple of them as well. but also, you know, Historic Environment Scotland, obviously the Heritage Lottery Fund, who've given us the largest award and have supported us all the way through the pandemic and the massive challenges that that caused us as a construction project. And, you know, just then obviously the inflation and the cost increases that have come from after Brexit have been really challenging for us to manage and deal with. And also, you know, we're a small team and an inexperienced team. I've certainly never undertaken a £8 million redevelopment project before. And I can safely say 100% surety I will never do it again. But I think it's been really worthwhile. I think it's been as you said earlier, there has been blood, sweat, and tears shed over the project. But I think on the whole, we'll have put Carmarthen front and centre in terms of the importance of its archaeology. And I think that was tremendously important for us to do. But also, you know, providing a safe home for our Argyll's archaeology, because there isn't anywhere any other suitable facility in the region, and what the alternatives would be for that would be for the material to leave Argyll, and that would be tremendously unfortunate, I think. But, you know, in terms of what because archaeology is such an important part of the cultural landscape of Argyll, to not be able to look after the archaeology here would be a tremendous shame, I think. So, and also we've obviously worked in partnership with Historic Environment Scotland, who manage the monuments, the properties in care, as they're known. So they're managed by the state, and obviously they haven't. That, you know, if we weren't here, they would almost certainly would have looked at some point to have set up their own visitor information or facility of some sort in the Glen. So I think we have a service level agreement with Historic Environment Scotland, and that's to provide access, facilitate access and educational services and curatorial services for the Glen's archaeology. And they've also been tremendously supportive in awarding funding for us. But I should also say we've had over £1 million worth of donations from private individuals, and that is I've been told by a funding specialist that is quite a tremendous figure in terms of the proportion of funding, and I think that has to be testament to the belief that these private individuals have in Carmarthen Museum and the importance of what we've been trying to do here. They know who they are. I'll say thank you to them again, because the people who donated substantial amounts of money on the whole have mostly wanted to be anonymous, but it's been tremendous that they've wanted to do that, which is it's you know, it's really great. So
I think it is sort of fairly unprecedented for these kind of projects from my experience, and I think, you know, I don't think if you haven't been involved with these projects, people shouldn't underestimate the conditions that come with the funding, appreciated as it I think we all are of when any of us get funding for these projects, but they all end up for different things with different conditions and different reporting. It's not without the ties, and pulling lots of different sources of funding together in one project is exceptionally complex. Well done to you and the team for getting it over the line, because I think it looks stunning and I can't wait to see the inside. I think it's going to be amazing. Yeah. And I mean, you're so right. I think that part of Mid-Argyll is probably underestimated in terms of sort of as a visitor attraction and our history and our culture. And tourism are such important economic drivers for Argyll and Bute. I think it's going to be such a great addition that will hopefully draw more people into the area and will be a catalyst for further growth, which will be fantastic.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, growth for everybody in terms of making sure that, you know, everybody benefits, you know, locally, the local economy. I think it will be tremendous. And I mean, when you even if you think about one of the stories we're telling is about a person who was buried here 4,000 years ago that almost certainly came from the part of the continent of Europe that we now call Holland. I mean, that's 4,000 years ago. Someone's travelled to Carmarthen. You know, and the story of Dunad as well is internationally important. This is, you know, partly the place where, you know, Scotland was born essentially. So from an the national story of Scotland, it's tremendously important. But it does surprise me that it's not better known. But that's partly what the project is trying to do, is to, you know, is to really put Dunad and the Glen on the map. In terms of its the rightful place it should take in Scotland's history, in the nation's consciousness, I think. So we're looking forward to welcoming you, Pippa, as well.
No, well, I can't wait, and soon it'll be open to everybody. So and I was going to do a as well as, you know, obviously we want people to come and visit the museum. You've also written a book in the footstep of kings, which gives people walks where they can see some of those sites and then hopefully come and then experience the interpretation and things in the museum as well.
Yeah. And actually, one of the things we're going to do next is to we need to reprint that book, because it's a bit out of date now in terms of the story. But because we've done a tremendous amount more research since we started creating the museum exhibition. So, it's still available, but we're hoping to get a new print version out I think probably end up being about 6 months, because we've been quite busy.
Well, I can recommend it, because we bought it when we first moved to the area. It's a great way to introduce walks and things, but you get the history and things as well, I think, and it kind of leads you through those bits. But yeah, if people do those walks and things, when can they come in and to the museum, and when are you open and things? So hopefully people will be knocking at the door, desperate to come and see what you've done.
I mean, we're the staff are in the building, and we're working on finishing off the exhibition and all of the things we need to do to to be able to get past building control to allow the public into the building. But I see every day kind of noses and fingers pressed up against the glass windows of people trying to get in, and I feel awful that we've been shut all this summer. But obviously we've been 8 months delayed getting back into the building for various reasons. That's why we're opening to the public on the 3rd of September instead of what we were hoping would be in March this year. So 3rd of September is the public opening, and we'll be able to take bookings from the 21st of August. So if people want to phone or email for bookings, or they can just turn up from the 3rd of September onwards. So we're so looking forward to welcoming people into the into the building. We can't wait either.
I know, there's always that lull while you have to close to do the works, and I always think it's quite a difficult period. So Hopefully it'll be great. But you're on social media as well, so people can see you starting to plan for restocking all the artifacts and things and follow along. Where can they follow you on social media?
So we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. I think if you just search for Carmarthen Museum, you'll find us. And we are now sort of ramping up the stories of as we're starting to get artifacts back into the building. Stories of the artifacts. We've got lots of sort of installation videos and photographs and everything. But I think what one of the things that's been quite difficult, I think, is, you know, we put on social media that we've got the keys back to the building, and then we've got a lot of comments saying, "Yay, we'll come visit next week then." And we're kind of, "Oh, hang on a minute, we actually that's just the shell of the building, and we've actually got to create, you know, create the exhibitions to you know, and that get the shop built, the reception desk, the cafe, kitchen in, and all of those kind of things." And because we were 8 months overdue, the exhibition fit out team was quite a big fit team. Actually, were working on other jobs, so we had our time slot was missed basically. So that's been challenging for us. But we're one thing I think the pandemic has taught us is that there's always solutions to every challenge that you face, isn't there, some way or another? And we just say we've become creative solution finders rather than although every now and then we do have a tendency to, well, me particularly, throw up my hands in the air and run around and panic for 5 minutes and then pull myself together eventually. So
The end is in sight, and I think it's from everything I've heard, it's going to be well worth it, the wait. And so I know I'm booked in to come as soon as the doors open, so hopefully other people will do the same, and you'll have a steady stream through the door, because I'm certain it's going to be worth the wait. So look forward to it.
Thanks, Pippa. And we should also say thanks ever so much as well to the council for all the support, financial, moral, advice that you've given us over the project as well.
No, well, I hope it's been useful, but I know it's a big thank you to you and the team and your board for persevering. So hopefully we can celebrate once the doors open and all that hard work. So
I mean, it's, you mentioned the board. We've had tremendous support from volunteers, but the trustee board really ought to get a special mention, because they are volunteers and they've put it's a tremendous amount of work and effort on their part to, you know, to be a board of a charity that's undergoing such a huge project. You know, it's I get paid, they don't. But
No, it's, I mean, we do rely so much on people, volunteers and people volunteering to go on boards for all the organisations. So no, I think there's too many people. I know I've got in my briefing notes here a list of all the partners and a list of everybody involved, and we would be here probably all day listing them out. So as you say before, I'm sure they all know who they are, and a big thank you on behalf of all of Argyllshire, I think, to all of them. And I'm sure they'll be featured in on your website or in the museum, so that they get a shout out.
Certainly. I mean, the trustee board in particular, I think they've also, you know, some of them have also donated financially to the project as well, which is tremendous of them. But I guess that's that to me says that, you know, this is such a, it's been such a worthwhile project that that's been worth it, worth all the, you know, all the work and the effort that's gone into it. But I would say my hat off particularly to the board of, because they are volunteers, and it's a huge responsibility as well, to, you know, you know, things like managing cash flow and grants and all the rest of it. As you know, Pippa, you know, grants come in the retrospective, so you know, we've had to take out ginormously expensive loans to provide the cash flow. So, you know, it's quite stressful to be, you know, a volunteer having that kind of level of responsibility as well. But as you know, so many projects in Argyll just would not get off the ground without people like that who are willing to take that risk, I think. So
no, absolutely, it just wouldn't happen. So
yeah,
well, no. Look forward to coming, and I can't encourage people enough, because I know it's going to be fantastic. So
yeah,
enjoy the opening, and actually being able to enjoy the space that you finally got. So thank you, Sharon.
Oh, thank you, Pippa. No, that's thank you very much for being interested as well. So thank you.
I know I'm looking forward to seeing the new museum, but go along for yourselves and see on the 3rd of September just what the new exciting museum space has to offer.
Pippa's Podcast.